Fine. So the Gemara says Vashlakot. So this is what we call Bishul Akum. Cooked foods, Minani Mili. So what does that already imply when we say, from where do we derive this?
It's a reference.
I don't know. What is this?
It holds books.
Oh, cool. Okay. Gemara says, I need one of those. You're like, Minani Mili. So what's the source? What does that already imply? At this stage in the Gemara, what does that tell you?
That there's a price.
That no, that it's that the Gemara is entertaining the possibility that it's Doraita, that is biblical, right? Because the Gemara is now about to ask for a pasuk. So Amar Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Reb Yochanan, Amar Kra, Ochel Bakesef Dashbirani, Vachaltim Vachalti Umayim Bakesef. Sorry, Ochel Bakesef Dashmeni Vachalti Umayim Bakesef Titinli Vishatiti. What does that mean?
Food.
So this is where what? This is where Moshe sends a letter to Sichon, and he says, let me pass through your country, and then what will I do? Ochel b'kesef dashbirani v'achalti. Food for money you shall supply, and I will eat. Meaning, it'll be in your economic best interest to let us through, because we'll buy food from you, and we'll buy water from you. So the Gemara says, ma mayim. Shlo nishtanu, af ochel shlo nishtanu. So the Gemara here makes a very interesting attempt at a drasha, which is, instead of taking this as descriptive alone, meaning, we'll buy food from you, it's saying that we'll buy food, but only a specific type of food, because there's an assumption that not all food would be permitted. And what food would not be permitted? So the Gemara says, well, what hints do we have in the pasuk? It says that I'll eat the food that you provide and the water that you provide. Now, what is unique about water? So the Gemara picks out one quality of water that is unique. What is that quality? It doesn't change. Just don't guess. Shelo nishtanu. Water doesn't change. You don't process water. Right? Water is water is water. So the food that you can have is unchanged, which implies that food which is changed is prohibited. Now, what's the problem with this? That this would, A, imply that all cooked food is usur. But is that true?
No.
No, so we're going to see that's not true. Right? Right? And second of all, is the only way to change food through cooking? No. Very good. There's all types of things. There's also pickling. There's also, right, you can, there's cutting maybe. It depends how expansively you want to take the idea of changing, right? So, elameata. So now the Gemara highlights this, right? So the Gemara highlights this exact point. Chitin v'asan klayot. If I had wheat and I roasted them, right? If I roasted them.
Hachanami da'asurim.
So then you would say that roasted grain is also prohibited. So the Gemara says, v'chitei machanami. What type of question is that? Maybe it is. He says, no, that contradicts a braita. V'atanya, chitin v'asan klayot mutarin. Right? If you make wheat, you pop wheat, so that is permitted. Right? Think popcorn, but popped wheat. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So the Gemara still wants to assume that the pasuk is not just descriptive but normative. And saying, fine, the only food we will eat is that which is like water. Let's pick a different quality of water to compare food to. What is that? Ela kimayim. Ma mayim shlo nishtanu mi briatan. Av ochel shlo nishtanu mi briato. It's not something that hasn't changed at all. But it's something that their state has not altered. Like their original state has not altered. I'm not pulling it. That's what the Gemara is pulling out. You were going to see. The Gemara is going to reject everything I just said, right? But so far, I want you to understand how we get to where we get, right? So the Gemara introduces this, and he says, right, the Gemara at this point is making a few jumps. It's assuming that when Moshe told Sichon, we'll eat the food that you eat and that you give us and the water that you give us, that is implying that we'll only eat certain types of food, and what quality, what type of food? That which is compared to the second half of the puzzle, which is water. Now, A, that's not in a normative context. It's not imperative. It's narrative, right? Yes, I know. But this is what the Gemara is assuming. And then the Gemara says, okay, what quality of water? So the Gemara says, well, maybe that it doesn't change. Well, that's not true because we know that things that can change can still be permitted, like popped wheat. So he says, fine. Not nothing that changed, but something that when it changed, it didn't lose its
inherent
its like shape and structure. It doesn't look different. So like a baked apple, presumably, is still the same or something like that. Right?
Maybe a similar comparison to how...
Well, maybe. We'll see.
A baked apple will retain its
strong or break, right? So maybe, right? You got to figure it out. So the Gemara says, ah, oh, come on. Fine, I'll give you a case where it's clearly changed. Grinding. Hachanami d'asurin. But what's the problem? That's not asur, because what is the category we're talking about? Cooking. Very good. And so maybe you'll tell me, well, that's your bias. Maybe really the prohibition is not cooking, but processing. The Gemara says, no! V'chide machanami. Again, the Gemara says, how do you know that's not true? V'atanya, because the Braita tells you it's not true. Chitin, by the way, the Ran will sometimes make the point, I don't know if he does on this sugya, that sugya are written backwards. Right? That they're edited backwards, meaning, like, the Gemara has a point it wants you to get at, and if it just showed you the final Braita, all these Havaminas would be pointless, but it wants to slowly make its point, so it presents you information.
And then it goes about proving it.
No, meaning it presents it backwards. It presents you with the minimalist Braita first. Right? Meaning, because what are you imagining? Are you imagining that, like, they were in the Beit Midrash, and someone said, aha, this is the halacha, and someone said, wait, let me look it up. Oh, I found a Braita that says that this is permitted. Okay, let me look for another Braita. Oh, I found another Braita. Okay, look. Let's look at a third Braita. The Ran says, no, sometimes when you find things like this, they have all the Braita in front of them, but they're structuring the sugya
so that you'll
learn the chidushim, right, step by step. So they take the most minimalist, and then they... And then they build. So the Gemara says, we have a third Braita that says, Chitin Vasan Klayot Ukmachim Uslatot Shalahen Mutarin. If you make the grain into flour or into these popped grains, right, no, flour or fine flour, they're permitted, which means that change is not the standard. So now the Gemara says, aha, I have a different Chiddush for you. And that is, Ella kimayim ma mayim shel nishtanu mibriato al yedei haor av ochel shel nishtanu mibriato al yedei haor. Smart idea. Just like water did not change specifically through fire, the food that you're allowed to eat is what? Right, so this has to be things that are not
changed through fire.
Fire, and finally, the Gemara says, "Really, mide orktiv? Did anybody say the word fire? What? Where did you get that from?" The Gemara says, "You're right. El mide rabbanan cross machta ba'alma. The whole thing is rabbinic, and this was an asmachta. You're right. This was a bad source.
So what's an asmachta?
Asmachta. Oh, so what's an asmachta? Good. Mordechai, tell me what's an asmachta.
No, tell me what's an asmachta. He already knows."
So, okay, so Mordechai tells me that according to Rashi, and according to the Rambam, and according to Tosfot, according to the Kuzari, and according to Rov Rubo Shel Rishonim, Asmachta is either, it's a hint, it's a mnemonic, right? So, meaning, the Torah, as is described in the Sefer HaBatim, right? You explain Torah, right? Torah used to be Baal Peh. So how did you make sure that people remembered it? By hanging things that are not really based on psukim, right? That's what you do, right? What you do is you based it on psukim, even though it's correct, and therefore it's just, you know, it's nothing, right? What, however, oh, there's another way of understanding Asmachta. Very good. What's the other way of understanding Asmachta? Thank you very much, Mordechai.
Purposely vague.
Oh, very good. So the Ritva says, what is this thing? What heresy are you people spewing? Rambam, Rashi, Tosfot, Kuzari, Ramban, every Rishon who ever lived. What is this heresy that you spew? Right? You think that Asmachta is a mnemonic, or maybe Gevalt, according to some Rishonim, it is aesthetic? It's beautiful. You know, it's just nice. It's nice.
Admittedly, I don't really like aesthetic.
So the Ritva says, no. What's in a smachta? Smachta is where God hinted at something in the Torah, and it's really there. The difference is only that biblical law, God told you, you must do this. And a smachta, God said, here's a suggestion. Take it or leave it. If you take it, then what you are doing is channeling my will. You don't want to take my advice. I'm not forcing you. It's not midoraita. It's God's advice. It's not. The Torah is not telling you to do it. No. God, he's not telling you have to. He's just giving you advice in the Torah. What? Well, one second. That is the Ritva. But as Mordechai notes, the majority view is what? It's just a mnemonic, right? And therefore, when the Gemara here says it's just an asmachta, what it means is this is not biblical at all. Meaning, you had a million problems with these drasha? Good. You should. It makes no sense, right? Well, so this is the question, is what does asmachta mean? Right? If you think asmachta means it's just mnemonic, then...
It's fine if you have a couple of problems along the way, because you were just supposed to be trying to remind it of this.
Correct. It wasn't really what the psukim meant. If you're like the Ritva...
You have a couple of things to answer.
Correct. Then you have a slight problem, because you'll say, no, God hit it here. Now, the Pri Chadash, I think we mentioned this last time we did asmachta. Pri Chadash has a chiddush that suffix asmachta... Well, okay. What's the third major sheet of Asmachta, you remember? Is the Maharil. You remember the Maharil? Maharil was the one that, according to Rambam, is probably Asher Midoraita. Remember this? Maharil says in Asmachta is where Chazal wanted to trick you into treating a law, taking a certain law seriously, so they attach it to a pasuk, so you would think it's Doraita, and it's not. Yeah, probably. Now... The question, so the Pri Chadash has a chiddush that safek asmachta lechumra. Then in the case of safek asmachta, it's lechumra. Now, Rabbi Yosef Engel has two possibilities. Why would you hold that? So one possibility is because he holds like Maharil, that if Chazal are trying to trick you, so then, yeah, and therefore you should just raise it. Then he says, that's crazy. So he says, it must be that the Pri Chadash holds like the Ritva, right? That a asmachta is somewhat of a doraita. However, later Achronim distinguish between asmachtot sheyesh lamikra min haTorah and asmachtot sheein lamikra min haTorah. Asmachtot that are rooted somehow in a real way in the biblical law, and those that are not. Correct. It would be that there are some asmachtot that are more Ritva-esque. Correct. And some asmachtot... Sure. Now, that then leads to a discussion in the Maharal, not Maharal, Maharal, in Baragola, as to Bishul Akum, right? Meaning, once the Gemara has said this, is the drasha here at all relevant? Meaning, if you take a pure Rashi, Rambam, Tosfot, Ramban view, that Asmachta is just a hint, then is any of this previous analysis from the Psukim relevant, Lahalacha? No. No, it's just a hint, and the rules are going to be what we establish later on. However, if you hold of the Ritva, right, that an Asmachta actually at some level hints at it, even though you're right, it's not pshat, and therefore there might be problems, but it does hint that God wants something to happen. So then you might still have to take these drashot a little bit more seriously, right? Or a lot more seriously, and that would try to figure out, well, even if it is an Asmachta, even if you hold of the Ritva, are all Asmachta created equal? Or is there a difference between an asmachta yeshleikum in a Torah and asmachta sheinleikum in a Torah? Right? So the reason I wanted you to read it is because you have to understand that this is in the background. Okay? And let me see if I can just find it right now. I just want to pull up the text. Yeah. So if I pull up the text, very briefly, So the Ber Hagola says as follows. Okay? He says, V'chasher takkor al mekamoshe berazet timtzadon arba chalakim. So he's going through the nature of the of rabbinic law. He says, "Aechad mishberu chachamim hamitzvah shatorah nikra divrei sofrim." There's divrei sofrim. Now, what is that? Einakav ala klal sheyazem divrei brivad. Divrei sofrim is not purely rabbinic. Ki Torah hilagam reads Torah. V'chayev alav kemoshe mukhayev al davar tarmi furash. Okay, that's one. Hasheni hamitzvah shem ba'atzman divrei sofrim. And then there are things which are totally rabbinic, and he says, and people, that's when the Torah says, cross, the Gemara says, cross machta ba'alma. V'rabim to'im shesovrim lomar ki ein lo tov mitzvah klal shum inyan ela Torah b'emet. Some people make a mistake and say that when we say a machta ba'alma, it means that it's not connected to biblical law at all, but they are wrong. They are wrong, according to the Maharal. Rakshem asu le mitzvah davar drash manatar ki ilo hayazem mitzvah vad. Right, and he says no. The drash at some level is a melitza, right? Meaning it's not really from it, but yesh beemet raya minakral debreihem. Meaning it's not full, right. There is at some level a core in the Torah. And now he says, okay, what about our sugya? So he says, Peregein Ma'amidin, Hashlokim V'akvashim Asturin. And he quotes our Gemara, where the Gemara tries to prove it from the Torah, and then it says, Nasmachta. Says, Eina Pershia Kaduv Zecher Melitza Belvad. So Maral argues, what type of Asmachta is this? So some Achronim say it's Asmachta that is, and there's no Iker Ben HaTorah. But the Maral argues, no. It really is derived from the Pasuk. How? Didn't the Gemara just say that's incoherent? Yes. Basically. Right? So he says, Ukra Urcha de Milta Kamarsh, Umash in Nivdelmu Macherik Mo Yisrael Nivdel Mikol Umot, in Derech Liot Lem Chibor Vashitu Vim Uva Shilavdel Mimena. He's saying, look, there is a core. What's the core? That a nation as unique as the Jewish people, it would be natural for them to separate themselves from others. And therefore they limit what they buy from others. They only buy things that haven't changed. And that's why he said, why is it an asmachta? Because it's narrative and not law. Meaning, what is it telling you? It's telling you, I'm going to buy from you, but the way, he said, the general implication of the Gemara, which is that the Jews are going to buy from Sichon, but not everything. They're going to maintain some distance, right? Meaning, I'm going to buy, but the implication of the reading is not everything, and only the things that are similar to water, which admittedly is a stretch, but he's saying, even if you can't figure out what exactly is like water, the point is they're saying, we're not buying everything from you. Right? So he says, that's because it is natural. And he said, why? Because one of the ways that nations separate each other, themselves from each other, is in food preparation. Right? It's one of those cultural things. Wrong. Right? That people, one second. Because food is your soul. Gives you life. And lufichach osha chalshenasa ochal yedei echad mi umacheret. And therefore, if food was made and processed by the other nation, you should distance yourself. Right? So, what is he saying? And now he says, how does this connect to the theme of Bishul Akum? I mean, this is at some level, right? Chadnut. Right? Meaning, what's his whole point? Is that, you're right, it's not really from the Pasuk. The point is that Chazal are teasing at an idea that they're not going to just buy anything from Sichon, because like food has an intimate quality, has a cultural quality, right? Now, I don't know if I buy it, but what the Maral is saying is that what Chazal are pointing to is the fact that food is a very important cultural space, and therefore one of the ways to create a certain level of distance is to limit
How much food
you buy from the other person. without getting into the details, you can always say, well, what about the case? And you know what you do when you do when people ask questions like that? We throw them out of the Beit Midrash.
Go.
No, I'm serious. No, that's what Gemara says. Rabbi Yirmiyah has a famous question, right? The Gemara is trying to figure out in the context of Rov and Karov of what is more powerful to create presumptions, proximity or statistical majority, right? And what if their intention? No, no, no. Physical proximity. The Gemara is trying to figure out how do we know whether a dove belongs to, is from the world, is from the world, or it's from your private thing. The Gemara says, well, if it's close to you, right? So then it has the status of Karov. And if it's far away from you, then it's not close to you, and it's more likely to come from the world, which is Rov. And the Gemara spends a lot of time trying to figure out the tension. No, physical proximity. This was not like deeply spiritual, right? And then the Gemara says that so the Gemara comes up with a line, which is 50 amot. Right, it's within 50 amot. Then Rabbi Yirmiyah says, but what if one foot's on one side and one foot's on the other? And they say, for this, they chucked him out of the Beit Midrash because they said, "Kol midat chacham kachu." That's how rabbinic law works, man. Right? There's a line, and yes, you'll always ask me, "Why do you draw the line there?" And the answer is, "You had to draw it somewhere." No, yes, that's the answer. Yes and no. So not exactly. Meaning, we'll see that in halacha there are possible issues with what if someone who works for you, right? Now, in general, we don't assume there's halachic status to someone who works for you, right? There is halachic status to an Eved Kanani, like a slave, right? So there is that discussion in Psak, but then in the medieval period, there's a question, okay, but what exactly are the parameters of that, right? Does it have to be someone who's actually has the status of an Eved Kanani? What about someone who just works for you, right? And because it does change the level of intimacy when someone isn't doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it because you hired them to do a job. Is that the same? No, but is that better than the person who is an Eved Kanani, right? Who's forced by law, right? They're than a slave? Has to do it. I understand. So, right, it could be at some level, but on the other hand, the slave is also partially Jewish, right? Once they're in a middle state, right? So it's also somewhat better, right? So, but this is one of the discussions that you'll see, right? Okay, we'll get there. By the way, you should know, this is a major issue. How we posture on this issue is major because, you know, one of the very problematic issues in even like, you know, Shomer Kashrut communities is this issue, is that people don't quite process the very serious potential halachic problems with having their nanny cook in their house. And we're going to see that. And you'll see, not only is this a question because of what happens when someone works for you, where the simple shot is, we're not makeup, but we'll see. It's also two day out in the Rishonim, but in general, Shulchan Aruch is machmir, that if you mess up on this, not only is the food not kosher, but
cookware isn't.
Yeah, right? It chafes up the kalim. Yes, like when our microwave is used, our right toaster oven is used, even if it's not kosher, even if it's kosher food, if it was raw, right, according to one day in Shulchan Aruch, that would be enough to make it treif. No. The oven would become not kosher. No, but that's because it wouldn't be bishlako, right? Because it's already cooked. Yeah, for sure. So we haven't gone there. So we're getting ahead of ourselves. I wanted you to understand this, right? Is it biblical or is it rabbinic, right? Right. But that's what I wanted to get you to so far, is that in the Gemara, the Gemara goes through a lot of effort to try to establish that it might be biblical, and then it chucks that to the wind and says, adds an asmachta, but the question is, what does it mean by that? Does it mean it's purely rabbinic, and this pasuk is irrelevant now, and now the standard is only what we have? Or, like, the Maharal is like, no, there is a core to a right idea that's emerging, and then it manifests itself in certain ways, right? But the fact that there is a certain biblical logic isn't rejected. Fine. So now the Gemara introduces the actual rules. So Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav, Kol HaNechol Kamot Shehu Chai, Ein Bo Mishum Mishulei Ovdei Kochavim. anything that could be eaten raw does not have the prohibition. Correct. Could be eaten raw. Now, obviously, you're going to have to figure out how raw is raw, right? Meaning, correct, right? You need to figure out what if standards change. You have to figure out what if it could be eaten raw, but most people don't, right? Is it what most people do, or like it could be, right? So, like a carrot, right? Carrots can obviously be eaten raw, but apparently, this was not always normal, right? When I was in Rambam, they told me of a particular posek who was very insistent that because when he lived in Europe, no one ate raw carrots, that eating a raw carrot was shahakol. And they informed him that in America, it's totally normal for people to have carrot sticks. And he's like, no, it is weird. It is shahakol. Nobody eats raw carrots. You definitely can. This is something you definitely can.
Listen.
Yes, but it's only, you only say hadamah if that's the normal way of eating it. And he said, no one eats it. No one eats it raw. And you only eat it cooked. And they're like, Rebbe, no, people eat it raw. And he's like, no, nobody eats it raw.
I'd make sure every meal I invited him to had raw carrots and celery with ranch as an appetizer beforehand.
Correct. Yeah, it's not about whether it grows from the ground. Like, if something is if normally only in cooked, then you say shahako when it's raw and adama when it's cooked.
Rudy, ask Rav Zuri.
So, like, I think a potato... Potato, my guess, is probably like that nowadays.
On chocolate.
Right? Right, probably. Right? If you ate a raw potato... Right? No, I'm saying if you ate a raw potato, I would assume it would be shahakol. Right? Because it's abnormal. Right? But it would be hadama when it's cooked. Right? Baked, cooked, whatever.
Tell Rudy what bracha you say on chocolate.
Normally you'd eat the bean itself like they did in Africa, and that would be adama.
No, he says...
I say ha'et, but let's move on.
On
it grows on a tree.
Yeah, but then it's been transformed, right? If it's been transformed...
I do eat it raw.
Some people do.
Is that the normal way?
Not here.
Okay, fine. So, anyways, that's the first, but that's... Neither here nor there. That's the first standard. Besura matnu hachi. Bepampadita matnu hachi. That Amar of Shmuel bar of Yitzchak Amarav. Kol she'eino nechal al shulchan melachem. Anything that isn't eaten on a king's table, lila feit bo et apat, to be eaten with bread. Ein bo mishum ovdei kol chavim. Now, how many standards are that? Is that one or two? So it sounds like it could be one. Right, because lelafid rotapat is you eat it with bread, which every meal had bread. And therefore, the way most poskim understand it, as we'll see, is what does this mean? Rule two is anything that would be eaten at a king's table. Now you got to figure out what's a king's table. Okay, fine. But as we'll see, some poskim say no, there's really two rules being introduced in the second clause. One is that it has to be eaten at a king's table. And the second is that it has to be the type of thing that's eaten with bread, which is very complicated in a world where we don't have bread at every meal.
And we don't have as many
kings. Well, that too. No, look, the OU, right? No, and we'll see that what could it be, right? Think about it. What could it mean, Olal Shulchan Malachem? Right now I'm just going to go through possibilities, but Olal Shulchan Malachem, what might it mean? Well, let's stick with a king's meal first before we get to Chashuv. What might it mean that it could be eaten at a king's meal?
Fancy.
Come on. No. Be more careful. Either anything that a king would eat or anything that would be at a king's table. Those are not the same. Right? Those are not the same. I mean, what does it mean, shulchan melachim? Right? That it's on the king's table. Is that something that a king would eat?
A king would serve.
Right? Exactly. Or a king would serve at a kingly meal. That the standard between those are?
Different.
Very different. Right? Right, because let's say, right, a king's meal would be, right, whatever. But like, so maybe King Charles really likes potato chips, but if you went to a king's, right, a meal at the palace, right, so which is it, right? And we'll see that this is a machloket, right, that this is a machloket, right, where the Chazon Ish famously is machmir to say that anything the king would eat, and therefore had a quip that even the King of England, Queen, I don't know when he was writing.
What year would have been roughly?
The Chazon Ish lived before she was queen.
What year would he have written?
That's why I don't know when he wrote it. But I think he said king, that even the king of whatever, right, has sardines for breakfast, right? Meaning, right, that it's a low bar because it's anything that he would eat, right? Nothing that's mamash, not chashuv, no. Whereas I know that the OU in general, I think, takes a more Makil standard and will like call up the White House and just say, what would you serve at a... No, that's actually what they do. You know, to they're like, what would you serve? Would you serve this as a chashev not? Right, if you take that, that's how you would do it, right? That would be the standard.
If you've ever been to the White House Hanukkah party, they serve kosher food on the White House Hanukkah party. So that means that then the kosher food now has this problem.
Not all kosher food. It's not a halos kosher food.
No, fine. I'm saying like jelly donuts, right? On the Hanukkah party, they obviously serve sukkaniyot. They serve the big spread.
Those are baked, so there's going to be pasta anyways.
Fine. Fish, right?
Maybe that.
I know it talks about fish.
Oh, fish for sure is all I'm showing on, please. Okay, so. First of all, not all fish grade ugel, but fish is presumably all shalom, for sure. So now the Gemara says, what's the difference? My benayu. There's a difference between small fish, because they're not eaten raw. Sorry, they're not eaten raw, in which case they should be asur, but they're not chashuv in their times. We'll have to deal with the changing times, but these small fish were not chashuv, and therefore kings did not eat them. In their time, arde are mushrooms, and daisa is porridge. Right? All these things are not edible raw, but they're not chashuv. You know, you don't go to the king and have oatmeal. Nisht, right?
What about coffee?
It's a very good question.
Because
it's a very good question. You don't want it. You don't. We can try
to open up that can of coffee.
You really don't want it.
I do. No. Worms. Whenever you tell me that I don't want to, it makes me want to more.
You don't. We'll get to it, but I had a Rosh Hashiva tell me that. Well, whatever. I'm not. Whatever, we got into a discussion about this, and I told him that he had to be very careful on this particular psak. Yes, no, it wasn't. I didn't like yell at him. He made a point about bracha, specifically what bracha you should say on coffee, right? And I said that by making a particular claim about the bracha on coffee, because of how Tosfot would connect Bishul Akum to bracha, you making an implication about Bishul Akum, and he was motzi la'az. Because the Minhag Klal Yisrael is to say that coffee has no problem with Bishul Akum, based on a very interesting read of Tosfot, which may not be right. No, this is a very old Shita. But we'll see. No, it's based on a Tosfot by beer. There's several steps we're going to have to get to. You're rushing me. Now at this stage in the Gemara, what does it sound like? Are these reasons both true or one or the other? One or the other, right? Because the Gemara says, what's the difference? Right? Yes? Right? So it sounds like these are mutually exclusive, or at least a question of one or one plus one, but not, right? But we'll see whether that's true, because the halacha, we might accept both. So Gemara says, okay, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav, Dagim Ktanim Meluchim, Ein Meshum Meshum Bishulei Ovde Chavim, these small salted fish. There's no Isra Bishul Akum. And Amar Rabbi Yosef, Im Tzila'an Oveg Kochavim, if a non-Jew roasted them, So Mech Yisrael Emishum Erev Tavshilin, you can use it for Erev Tavshilin, because it's cooked food, but it's still not Bishul Akum. You have Dino Avgolim Kasa the Harsana, but if he made Kasa the Harsana, which is a fish fried in oil and flour, then Aser. So Gemara says, Pshita, isn't that obvious? Karsa the Harsana was apparently a very fancy thing. So the Gemara says, no, Ma'u Jatema Harsana Iker. You might have thought that the flour is the essential component. Kamashmalan Kimcha Iser. I'm sorry, Kamashmalan Kimcha Iker. Sorry, the fish is not not the Iker, right? You might have thought the fish is like, no, this is basically flavored dough. Right, and the dough, okay, I don't exactly, whatever. So now the Gemara says, now the Gemara brings a case, and we learn that kavana, right, intention is also going to be important here. So the Gemara says, okay, we talked about, what? Cooking. But the Gemara says, what if it was unintentional? Amarav brona amarav. Ovi kocham shehitzit or bagam. What if a non-Jew set the swamp on fire? Right, or the meadow, or whatever you think it is. Kol, and now, what did he do? He toasted and roasted all of the kosher crickets. Kol, locusts. Kol, because he burned down the field, and there are crickets there. There are locusts. There's grasshoppers. Asurin. They're all usur. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? What's the case? If it's because you can't tell anymore what's kosher, what's not kosher, my iri ovi kochavim, then it wouldn't matter the Jew. Afil Yisrael nami. Ela mishum bishulei ovdi kochavim. It must be a bishulakum question. So the Gemara says, really? So what is at that stage, what does it imply? Does the goy have to intend to cook?
No.
The Gemara says, really? Ki agavnam yasser? Is that really forbidden? The Amar of Chanan Barami, Amar of Pidar, Amar of Yochanan, Hai Ovid Kochavim Decharech Resha, Shari Lamechal Minei. That if a goy was simply singeing the head of the animal, right, it was a way that you would get off like the hair to shecht it, you're allowed to eat it. A filo meir zune, even from his ear, which would have gotten potentially cooked simply from that singeing. So Amal Avruy Sever Kamachavim. So you see that because he had intention to remove the hair and not to cook it, we say it's not bishalakum. So he says, no, achanami legalui agma kavachanzu. Here too, wasn't he trying to just reveal the, right? He was, deforestation, right? So the Gemara says, la'olam de lo yada haitar vaitame, maestroi vod kavim. He said, nah, it really is a kashra trila. It's just that the story happened with a non-Jew. You're right, if a Jew burned it down, it would also be asur. But therefore, what is the implication? So what do we learn? That it is kosher. It's kosher. That if the non-Jew didn't intend to cook, it's kosher. Now you'll tell me, well, that's great. When does that ever happen? The answer is all the time. It happens all the time. When does it happen? This was a major shaila, right? When does it happen? When does it happen? A blackout, right? You put something on the stove. You have an electric stovetop, right? You put it on. 30 seconds after you put it on, it's totally not cooked. Electricity goes out, right? Now, half an hour later, the non-Jew working in the electric plant turns on, right? Managed to get it working again, right? You haven't moved your soup. No, I kid you not.
But it's so far removed. It's not
directly. No, but that's this shaila. Is that he's not intending to turn your butt. But we just said it's permitted. No, I'm saying this case happens.
Oh, this is allowed.
Yeah, the Gemara concludes it is allowed. But you're telling me, like, well, when's that ever happening? And I'm telling you that this is important because there are such realities, right? There's a tshuva, right, on this topic, which is it bishulakum if you had your soup sitting on the thing? All right? And the answer is, this is the right sugya, right? Because the non-Jew was fixing the electric plant, not cooking Rudy's soup, right? It happens to be that Rudy's soup is now cooked because the non-Jew
turned on the
electricity and returned electricity to the Upper West Side.
No. Rudy's living in Damascus.
Electricity. He's like, hey,
come down to the New York Power Playoffs. Because I'm trying to cook.
And he's like, well, I'll do it, but for your soup. Good. Now the Gemara says, Gufa. So again, right, you can eat even from the ear. And now the Gemara introduces another case. What if a non-Jew threw a peg into an oven to dry it, and a Jew had already put a gourd in the oven? The kavar Israel kara meikara, shapir dami. It's mutter because he helped with the cooking by right, because the fire wasn't on yet, right? You had hidden a gourd there. You were going to turn on the fire, right? And he turned on the fire to do handiwork, right? So Gemara says it's mutter. Shita, isn't that obvious? We just said that. Where it says, no, ma'u detema, levushe malakamachavi. Maybe the non-Jew was coming. Maybe his goal wasn't to fix his peg. It was to cook Rudy's gourd. Peg. Kamash malan, leshure malakamachavi. And he said, oh, come on. Right? He was going to, right, harden his peg. So Gemara says, fine. Now, what does it mean for the Jew or the non-Jew to be involved in cooking? So the Gemara now introduces another important principle. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hiniach Yisrael Basar Al Gabi Gechalim. If the Jew puts the meat on the coals, Uva Avei Kochavim V'Hafach Bo, and the non-Jew comes and he turns the meat over, so now the Jew started the cooking process, the non-Jew continues it. Is it mutter? The Gemara says, mutter. It's permitted. Hey Chidami, the Gemara says, what's the case? Ilema dilo habachlave bashil pshita. The Gemara says, if, had he not turned it off, it still would have cooked. That's obvious, because then the non-Jew didn't affect it. Ela lav dilo habachlave bashil on my mutter. But if it wouldn't have cooked without turning it over, then the non-Jew is responsible for cooking it. Bishulei shalav de kochavim ninu. The Gemara says, lo tricha. If he didn't flip it, it would take 2 hours to cook. But now that he flipped it, it took an hour to cook. I'm going to have thought that speeding up the cooking process is significant. Right? Come on. No, it's significant. Kamash Malan. It's not. Mor says, really? That anything that was cooked, like Michael Ben Drusai, right, which is to the point of edibility, which is we say at a third of the cooking process. Ben Drusai was a thief, and basically he never had time to be in one place, so he only cooked things to the minimal food. So that's the imagery in Chazal. There's no bishul akum ha'enu kamachol Ben Drusai yesh b'mishum over gochavim, which implies that if something isn't fully cooked, even if he's involved at all, it's usher. Where it says no hazam kagon the utve b'silta v'shakel gochavim v'utve b'tanura. If the Jew had placed the meat in a basket and then the non-Jew put it in the oven, then it's usher unless it had already been cooked Michael Ben Drusai. But it doesn't weigh in at all on the question when they're both involved. In Tanin Mihachi, the Brita says, Meniach Yisrael Basar Al Gabe Gechalim, a Jew who puts meat on coals, Uvaov Gochavim Mahapechbo, and then the non-Jew comes and flips it. Ad Sheyavo Yisrael Veda Knezav Veda Midrash, Eino Choshe Sheyavo. You don't have to worry. It's fine. And shofet that isha kedera al gabe kira, and a Jewish woman can put a pot on the stove, vado v'kochavim magisa, and the non-Jewish woman can come and stir it. Ad shetavim v'ra merchot v'ra knesim v'ra chosheshet. So now the Gemara says, what about the opposite case? What if the non-Jew did the primary and you did partial? So ibayelu, v'niyecho v'kochavim, what if the non-Jew put it on the flame, v'hafach Yisrael, and the Jew flipped it? Ma'u, what's the halacha? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, kal v'chomer. Gam Rubi Yad v'chavim mutter, gam Yisrael kol shekein. If the non-Jew finishing it is permitted, so shouldn't the Jew finishing it be permitted? Ah, good. So the Gemara does not say that, which means that the Gemara seems to have lowered the standard, right? And what's the standard? Then in order for it to be Bishalakum, a non-Jew has to do everything. But if the Jew does something significant, it's mutter. You're right, it's a chiddush. You could have just said, no, it's whoever does the most significant. Gemara says, no. Right? It makes a very interesting kavah chomer. It doesn't follow unless you assume that the point is correct. And the end, I guess, is the most significant portion. And nevertheless, because the Jew was involved, it's fine. And the Gemara says, yeah, that's the rule. It marnami, amar rabba marchana, amar yochanan, v'amil amar rabacha baracha, barchana, yochanan, bein sheniach v'chav mevach Yisrael, bein sheniach Yisrael v'avech v'chav, whether the Jew put it and the non-Jew flipped it, or the non-Jew put it and the Jew flipped it, mutter. It's permitted. It's only forbidden if the non-Jew did everything from beginning to end. Okay, so I wanted, again, to really do halacha seriously, you need to start with the Gemara. Even if we don't look at every Rishon, I want you to understand where the problems emerge from the Gemara. We're not quite finished. But we did see a lot of the key points. But I just felt if we're going to cover this for a little bit, we should read, you know, the Gemara together. Okay. We're not fully done, but it's time, so.